A written transcript of this episode is provided by Starburst. For more information, you can see the show notes.
Welcome to Data Mesh Radio with your host, Scott Hurlman, sponsored by Starburst. This is Adrian Estala, VP of Data Mesh Consulting Services at Starburst and host of Data Mesh TV. Starburst is the leading sponsor for Trino, the open source project, and Jamak's Data Mesh book, delivering data-driven value at scale. To claim your free book, head over to starburst.io.
Data Mesh Radio is provided as a free community resource from DataStax. Welcome to Data Mesh Radio, produced and hosted by Scott Hurlman, the founder of the Data Mesh Learning Community. Data Mesh Radio is a vendor-independent resource for learning more about Data Mesh. Let's jump in. Bottom line up front, what are you going to hear about and learn about in this episode? I interviewed Ramdas Narayanan, a Vice President Product Manager of Data Analytics and Insights at Bank of America. To be clear, he was not representing the company and was sharing his own views only. I asked Ramdas to be on to discuss lessons learned from building effective data sharing at scale on the operational plane over the last 5 to 10 years, so we can learn how to apply those to our data mesh implementations. There's obviously a lot that Jamak has talked about learning from the operational plane, including microservices, domain-driven design, how to do CI/CD, DevOps type of things correctly. So this is another way where we can learn what has worked around data sharing on the operational. The main output of the conversation for me is a guiding principle for getting data mesh right. Your goal is to convert data into effective business outcomes. It doesn't matter how cool or not cool your platform is or anything else. Drive business outcomes. It's easy to let that get lost in the tool talk and everything else around data mesh. Per Ramdas, when looking at creating a data product, or really any data initiative, you need to align first on business objectives, and that will drive funding. In the financial space, there is direct literal funding, but even outside, you should have the same mindset. Make sure you get engagement and alignment across business partners, technologists, and subject matter experts. How are you using technology to address or solve the business problem? As many have pointed out regarding data mesh, Ramdas has seen that if you don't focus on creating reusable data, you can create silos. You need cohesive data sets, not bespoke data sets for every challenge. That just doesn't scale. You should also study the data sources you are using. Is there additional useful data you could add to your data set or for other purposes? Keeping an eye out for business value will really add a lot of value to your overall organization. When working with developers, Ramdas recommends helping them understand how the business is going to consume and use the data, and then figure out if that should be something like an API or web service or more of a custom batch delivery. It is important to also work with data consumption teams to be reasonable in their consumption demands. Getting them to modernize how they consume data can be a challenge, and that can put an unreasonable burden on producing teams. So we need to find a good balance there, a good solution. Ramdas talked about how crucial conversations and cultural in general are to getting data projects/products right. Sometimes the conversations can be tough, but often they really aren't all that tough. And there just needs to be an open exchange of context and information, especially aligning on business objectives. Projects that fail typically have poorly defined business objectives or a lack of alignment. Per Ram Dass, it is important to educate the business people on what data exists and especially what data doesn't. That clouded vision of what data is available creates a lot of frustration. We need to get better in general at data discoverability so the business folks can know what is available and get access easily. Ram Dass has seen that good context in metadata also leads to better context sharing at the person-to-person level as it generates additional conversations. This makes sense. If you share things down about the first three levels of what data you've got, those additional level 4 and 5, somebody's going to understand potentially what data is there, and you're going to jump ahead to better conversations, and you might really find those really valuable nuggets that would have easily been overlooked otherwise. To emphasize that point a bit more, Ram Dass believes that data discovery is the main spark for sharing context. Otherwise, we are at best exchanging data as ones and zeros instead of the actual information. Ram Dass believes everyone needs to understand how information flows through your systems. It can help you better understand the art of the possible and also identify gaps in how you will approach your challenges. Start your projects, whether that is a new data product, a new platform feature, or anything else, by having a lot of information architecture meetings. After that, start to focus on data discoverability. Show and tell sessions have worked well for him as they spark new thoughts and can surface good new ideas. Ram Dass wrapped up on a really crucial part of data maturity, which is the curiosity factor. Always be asking, why are you doing something? What problem are we actually trying to solve? Do we have the capabilities to solve that challenge or that set of challenges? How does the data flow through our systems? Can we push data quality upstream to prevent quality issues instead of remediate the data once you get it and try and make it better quality once it's already gone through the system? What guardrails can we put in place to prevent issues? How can we enrich our metadata to make this data even more valuable, etc.? I think you'll learn a lot around thinking ahead and thinking with intentionality towards what you're trying to do with your data. With that bottom line up front done, let's go ahead and jump into this interview. Super, super excited for this episode today. I've got Ram Dass Narayanan, who is the Vice President, Product Manager of Data Analytics and Insights at Bank of America. He is representing his own views today, but very, very excited about this episode because what we had talked about before, Ram Dass and I had talked about, was how Bank of America and other companies are doing this about how to build out a sharing culture from, you know, and the actual operational aspects of building out how you share data on the operational plane, kind of what we've learned there, how we're going to share that on the analytics plane, because, Jamak has talked about this as well. We've learned a lot about how we actually want to deal with sharing data from the operational aspect. So learning how people have done it well, like Ram Dass has been a big part of, is really, really important to getting data mesh right. So very, very excited about this today. Ram Dass, if you don't mind, if you could give people a bit of a background on yourself, and then we can kind of jump into the topic at hand.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Scott. Good afternoon, and thank you for having me on this podcast. Really excited about the opportunity to talk about a lot of data-related aspects and other practicing things that I've come across. For my background, I'm currently, like what Scott said, I'm a product manager at Bank of America within the Data Analytics and Insights team. I've been working with data in general in various capacities. I started off as a database developer way back in 1994 with the SQL Server 4.2. And I've kind of worked my way through different roles like a client server developer, database administrator, eventually stepped into business intelligence after year 2000, and then slowly kind of made my way through to a product manager, which is my current role. Primarily worked on a lot of different relational database systems. Very recently, I've been engaged in the financial services domain for the past 10 years or so, focused a lot on mortgage, basically consumer mortgages, and been part of a lot of development and conversion projects. And it became evident that as we were traveling through all these different projects that data was going to become more and more important for the business. And what I have witnessed in the last 5 years is an exponential increase, you know, in the volume of data, all the various mediums through which we get data, and the necessity for a business to really take advantage of all that data. The bottom line is that how can data be converted into effective business outcomes, which in turn will lead to, say, revenue generation or cost savings, which are like primarily the two main things we typically solve, you know, with the data. Of course, we have other areas that we cover, like regulation and compliance and very specific needs. But in broadly, you know, you're solving this, trying to generate proper business outcomes.
Right. And I think that's a very important thing, especially when you talk about data mesh, with how kind of people have really become so interested in data mesh. And yet there just isn't, you know, a lot of people are interested in doing it for the sake of doing it instead of like, there's a point. There's a point to doing this if you don't have that in mind.
Correct.
So kind of where we were looking at starting was the concept of building kind of authorized data sources, right? That there is an authority that is saying, or there is data sources where you're saying this can be trusted. And how can this be trusted? Because within what I'm finding more and more is the big issue with data is sometimes the data is available, but you can't know, can you trust it or how well you can trust it and things like that. So you've been working on this on the operational side, which is even more difficult in my view. You know, you might not be setting things up quite as much for kind of generalized use and reuse versus specific use. But I think that's we've got a lot of places to learn from on that side. So, you know, how do you start thinking about that aspect on the operational plane? And you know, we'll get into it. I don't want to ask the big question of, you know, tell us everything, but like, let's try and figure out how, what we can take from that and what we shouldn't take from that. Like, what should we leave on the operational plane and reinvent on the data plane?
Yeah, sure. So basically, Scott, the first thing is, what is the business outcome we are trying to achieve, right? So some of the operational projects that I've witnessed, they have a very strong business outcome. It can be anywhere from enhancing a current system capability to provide a better customer experience, or it can be to make the process more efficient so that you can eliminate a lot of sunken costs, a lot of costs that is not necessary. Also do cost savings in terms of redundancy of labor and effort. It can also be something related to the business outcome could be purely a regulation type of initiative, right? You are trying to solve a regulation problem. Let's say, for example, certain businesses are in trouble because they are not satisfying a certain type of audits or regulation requirements. So I think the key aspect is you need to have a solid business outcome. The places where I have seen this succeed is that is very well defined. Very well defined in the sense that it excites the whole, the business and technology committee. Everyone feels that that's a valid problem to solve. And the most important thing, Scott, is that it is going to be a funded initiative, right? See, there are, as we know, there are a lot of concepts that are being discussed today in the data world, but things don't really take off until they are funded, right? Till everyone knows that there is solid backing, financial backing behind this business initiative. So I feel those are the two main things that need to come hand in hand. So there is a general sense of agreement on the business objective. And we also know that it is going to be properly funded project or initiative. So that is where things start. And the other key aspect of this getting to build like a trusted data source is that you need to have the engagement of the business partners, the SMEs, and the technologists all at the very beginning, right? Because what I have seen is that it is not always that the business know what type of data is available. The technologists know that they do have data that is coming from various data sources, but then the technologists may not know all the correct business interpretations, right? So what I feel is that the early engagement of all the key stakeholders, the key technology partners, which includes architects, and also any other subject matter expert on that particular business domain, right? So for example, you could be talking about loan data, you could be talking about customer data, or you could be talking about something which is very financially related to one of those products, right? Some of the products you are selling, correct? So you need to bring in all those key partners upfront at the end, at the very beginning of the project. And we want to make sure that everyone gets the whole business outcome and how we are trying to solve that business outcome using data. That is the key connect over there.
Yeah, I think that making that gap between what are we trying to achieve and what technology are we trying or how are we trying to approach it? And so it's like, how are we actually using technology to solve the problem, right? We're not using technology for the sake of technology. Everybody kind of gets that implicitly, but I think it's good to actually state that very, very explicitly, right? To be extremely explicit and say, this has to have a purpose. You don't just get to play with the new tool for the sake of playing with the new tool.
Absolutely.
So one thing that I've seen, at least historically, in a lot of places on the operational side specifically, is very, very limited reuse. People are forming their solutions for only to solve that specific problem. You know, we need to get away from that within Data Mesh. But is that something that kind of that you've evolved past, or how do you think about making it so that there is a specific business outcome, but that data could then be reused, or that it could be formatted in such a way or processed or accessible in such a way that it isn't like we're only solving this very, very specific thing if it could be used for a broader audience?
Yeah, that's a That's a very good question, and I think that's very important also, because the downside of trying to be very specific is that we might start to create a lot of data silos, right? Meaning that it solves that particular problem, and then beyond that, it's not scaling or it's not applicable, and somebody else comes along and tries to solve some other problem, and you end up building, like, say, another data sets. And what you see in a span of time is that you have a lot of now data sites which are not really interconnected, and you end up with a lot of silos. Yes, that's a problem that is definitely to be avoided. One of the ways I've seen to tackle that issue is that, you know, when you are trying to solve the business problem, you know, you need to study the data sources, you know, that are going to be available to solve that problem. And as you are studying the data sources, also understand if there is a potential that these can be used for other extended business purposes, right? So one of the good examples is you can take is actually like customer or borrower data, right? So for example, if you are any type of company that is providing a service, you always have customers. And then, of course, when you are doing loans or any other loan type of products, you have what is called borrowers, right? So to solve a specific problem, you would be probably trying to get valid customer data or valid borrower data. But then the extended side of that is you can use that same customer and borrower data to extend your relationships, right? So for example, if I am selling a product on, say, Amazon or any other, say, Home Depot or Lowe's or something like that, and you come and make a purchase and you have my information, right? So, and say you were trying to solve a specific problem, you know, with that data, but now that I have your information, now I can try and see if I can extend the relationship with that customer, say, by providing or by giving him options of, hey, we have this service available for you, or we have this product available, would you be interested, type of thing, right? So one of the main things I see is that as you are building or solving a problem, also make a study of, is there a potential to extend this? And if it is, you know, that definitely becomes a very important data set or a data point. So that's one of the things I've noticed, Scott, is that some of the experiences I've been involved with is when you are trying to source the data, rather than just focusing on the very specific problem, we also try and see if there is enough generic information available so that it can be extended, you know, for other products. Yeah. I think this will be very applicable to businesses when they have multiple product lines going on, right? So for example, there might be a business ABC which is trying to solve a problem within a particular product line. But in trying to build a data source for that problem, they could be getting enough generic information that that company ABC can extend the capabilities or that data for other products.
Yeah, and I think within Data Mesh, what I'm hearing from a lot of folks is you don't do that extension just for the sake of doing the extension, but that you set yourself up so you can do that extension, right? That it's extensible, but that you don't already do that, because it's otherwise it's just work for the sake of doing work. But yeah, I think it's interesting. How it might be slightly different in financial services, because I am finding this when I talk to people in financial services, but like, how did those conversations go around people learning to share data effectively on the operational plane? Because a lot of people with Data Mesh are really struggling with that conversation of, Well, our developers have no idea how to share data. They don't want to share data. They don't like how did you get them to a place where they're willing and happy and able to?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I think that's a very good point. So the way it all I've seen go about is that firstly we engage all the business partners to understand what are we trying to get out of this data source, right, that we already talked about. And as we are trying to understand those type of needs, we also talk about how is the data need to come out of that data source that we are trying to build, right? So let's say I'm going to have interfaces to my trusted data source. Let's say I have 10 interfaces, meaning I'm going to get data from 10 different sources and I'm going to bring it into my trusted data source. We also then turn around and ask the question, okay, we have data coming in, how are we going to provision them out, right? What are the different ways we can provision theoretically? And then we talk about the business use case of, okay, we have the data, what you need, how do you plan to consume it? So there could be different ways. One is that the business could have their applications and the applications could be hitting the data source using a web service. You know, that is one possibility. And the other possibilities are that you can do custom batch provisioning, meaning that depending on the business requirement, I can say that data could be delivered, say, Monday through Friday, first thing in the morning, 6 a.m. Eastern, something like that. That can be made available based on how the business intends to, you know, consume the data. So that is something we determine when we talk with the business and stakeholders, right? So how are you planning to use the data? Are you going to be like purely interested in, like, say, the previous day data, or do you want near real time or real time type of setup, right? All of those discussions are happening as we are trying to set up the data source, because we want to make sure that once we set up the data source, we are able to support those type of initiatives, right? Maybe batch type of provisioning is probably easier to solve because you are basically doing it at a point in time. It's very fixed every day, but it becomes more challenging when you try to do more real-time and near real-time, because you need to have more horsepower, and then you also need to think about are you going to have conflicts or any type of resource issues or speed issues, because you are trying to do it in near real-time fashion. So to answer your question, Scott, if you are talking about operational data provisioning, the way I have seen it happen is that with the recent advent of APIs and web services, I think that has gained a lot of popularity, because for the consuming application, it is a matter of just calling a service and you get your data right away, right? But if the business intends to process data in bulk, then they might settle in for a batch type of a scenario where they might come and say, okay, you guys send me a feed every day at a certain time in the morning, and we can build capabilities to ingest that data into our application.
Right. And have you had pushback from the source teams? Like, this has been one of the big challenges that when I talk to people, is they're saying that they can't get those source teams to agree to give them the data, or to give them the appropriate data in the appropriate way with, you know, how they want to consume it. Is it that the teams that are consuming have to go to them with, like, this is what we're actually trying to do, and set up a meeting instead of tickets, right? Like, actually have the conversation and exchange the context of what are we actually trying to accomplish? How are we trying to accomplish that? And then start to talk about technological implementations is that even a challenge on the financial services side? I'm finding when I talk to financial services people, their teams are a lot more used to being data sources for each other. So it's a little bit of a different world.
Yeah, I think you bring up a valid point, because what happens in the financial services world in general is that there is a lot of legacy, you know, also that comes along with all these things, right? Like what you correctly pointed out, certain data sources will come and tell you that, hey, we have been doing it this way for so many years, right? Now, why are we trying to change that? Actually, we have run into challenges, especially on the other end of it, when we have to provide data to other systems, Scott, where they would not be ready to move to a more, let's say, a modern type of data consumption. They would put down their foot and say, this is how we have been doing it for the last, say, 10, 15 years. We want to do it the same way, right? So coming back to the sourcing, the way we have tackled that is we always have had conversations and upfront calls to tell them what type of business problem we are trying to solve. I think that is very important, because sometimes the data sources they are not aware of the different requirements, because for them it's like an extract. Hey, we send you an extract every day at 2 a.m. in the morning, and that's what we are going to do. So sometimes it becomes very important to engage them and tell them what type of a problem we are trying to solve, right? And we have had situations where the data sources had to make modifications to send, data based on the request that we needed. Basically, they had to create new extracts to solve our business problem. And that is something which was done with collaboration of everybody involved in the project, more specifically stakeholders. Because that kind of a perspective helps, because sometimes all the data extracts are handled by technology people, but sometimes you would need a business perspective to make them understand about the urgency or why this needs to be modified. So some conversations are easy, some conversations are tough. I'm not denying that. We have been part of such conversations. But it kind of is like a work in progress, right? I mean, some of the projects that I've worked on have taken almost 4 to 5 years to see the light of the day or the end of the tunnel, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot of discussions, running various types of meetings. And the other thing we try to do, Scott, is also showcase some examples, what is the business outcome? It could be like I'm sending letters to customers. Hey, this is what we are trying to do. And why do we feel that the data needs to be in by a certain time so that we can achieve this outcome, right? So some practical examples help us expedite that issue, meaning overcome that issue. So those are some of the things we have tried, and it has worked.
Yeah, and I think when I talk to a lot of folks, the giving people examples and giving people here's what we're consuming from another team, or here's the way our API looks from another team. So that way you don't just say, you need to serve this data to us in an API. It's like, well, here's three different examples of APIs that we're using to consume. Mm-hmm. Can you, we like these aspects of them. Is there something that you can build to this? Or even, if you can basically use the same building block or whatever for the API, like let's do that and do it that way. And it helps the team that's creating it too, to not have to think of, I have to create this from entirely from scratch versus I can look at how it was done.
Yes.
So the, you know, talking about the easy and the tough conversations, obviously, when you're doing a big cultural shift in these things, in any organization, it can be pretty challenging. We talked about a little bit offline about building a good culture to enable these conversations, to allow for change. So, you know, part of that is especially on somebody like yourself in the product management side of getting everybody into the same room together to have the conversation and not just, you know, ticket and backlog exchange type thing. But what have you found that's worked to getting people to kind of pair together on this stuff, on sharing data? And where do you think are some common pitfalls where that communication breaks down when it it's not that it's people just being frustrated and grumpy. It's that the communication itself is the challenge.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very important and a crucial step in building out a data as a product or any type of a trusted data source, and say eventually getting into a data mesh. So the negatives or the pitfalls in the process, right? So the business does not always have a very good view of the data. And what happens is that beyond the business interpretation or justification, they don't have visibility into what it's going to look like. So when that happens, there is like a clouded vision. And when the clouded vision sets in, a lot of frustration also sets in, right? It's because they are not able to make the decisions. It's almost like you hit a wall and you don't know what to do next. So there is not very good transparency. And secondly, there is not enough data discoverability. I think this is something I have learned a lot about in the last 4 or 5 years, why this is extremely crucial, that it needs to be there. Data discoverability. So if I don't know what is available, or if I don't have a way to access to see what is available, even like at a metadata level, right? Now, forget the real data, even at a metadata level, what type of business entities or logical entities do I have? That can create a big gap, you know, in how we are going to deliver the final business outcome. So I felt a lot of friction early on when we are going to have these conversations, or when we had those conversations, is because we didn't have that. I couldn't go to them and say, hey, this is how the data looks like. This is how the data seems to be structured in these systems. I didn't have enough sources. That was number one. And I didn't have a very good data catalog or a data governance type of system to point them to and say, maybe you can go and take a look at this catalog and kind of browse through what is available at a very high level. I mean, I'm not talking about table column level, but like a value chain, right? For example, within this value chain, these are the entities that will be present, and this is how they're all interconnected. I didn't have any of that. And even if I had those, they were very sparse. You know, they were not good enough to get them excited. And one of the things, Scott, I've seen is that people get really into a very good discussion mode, or a lot of good things come out when you have something to show them with the real data. That's where the whole conversation or the meaty outcomes, you know, come out of, is when you have those type of things you can showcase to the business, and you start to put in some valid context
then you really get some very good conversations going, which can lead to some very good outcomes.
So when I saw that gap, so we said, okay, how are we going to address this right now? We need to have both business and tech work together. So what is going to be the glue that will solve this problem? So the decision was made that we are going to focus very heavily on the metadata aspect. We are going to start defining what type of entities are available within my trusted data source. And we are going to give a pictorial representation of that. And the pictorial representation usually is in the form of a tool. So the metadata repositories can be built in-house. But today in the marketplace, as you know, there are a lot of tools available that have that capability, right? That help you to build that capability. So I think that is the key factor. So if I can go into a room and showcase that information, I think that will bring about a lot of valuable conversations. And that's what we started doing. So we said, okay, in order to solve your problem, I want you to tell me what type of a business context you are looking at, what type of elements you are looking at, and you provide those to me. And then from the technology side, we will try to do a mapping exercise on how they connect to the data from the different data sources. Once we started doing that, things started turning around slowly. And today we have a pretty decent data discoverable platform.
Nice. Yeah, I think a lot of what you were talking about there is kind of through lines that I'm hearing on a lot of the episodes that I do as well, where like Tim Tischler had talked about, if you even study the way that humans learn, if you're going into a meeting where you're trying to get things done, right, where there's specific objectives to it, your brain functions in a different way than if you're going into a context sharing session. So like those more context sharing sessions of, hey, we want to talk about what's available and what's there, or that your brain functions just differently. It's more open to new things rather than, okay, what am I trying to get, what objectives do I have to write down as the result of this meeting? Because it's not a productive meeting unless we have, 23 objectives, versus just getting in that room together more often and virtually or whatever, and sharing that. And I liked what you talked about of the platform is sparking the conversations. I think too many people try to solve all of data discovery with the platform. And if you try to only solve these challenges that work much better with people involved at some point, I just keep seeing people fail versus exactly what you're talking about. Make it so that people can understand what's there, what's available, the kind of the art of the possible, and then they can go and talk to somebody and there's a clear path to talking to somebody. I think that sparking that conversation is really, really crucial. And I don't think anybody's really talked about that specifically yet. So I think that's a really, really crucial point to doing data mesh, right, around data discovery. Do you have any insights that you can share? I mean, data discovery just gets very, very difficult. But like, are there any insights or paths that you would recommend for people, patterns or anti-patterns around that data discovery, because this is kind of the main challenge or one of the three top challenges, I think, that everybody talks about with data mesh.
Correct. Yeah. So I think this was something I encountered, very recently. Like typically what happens, right, in projects, data projects, if you're on the technology side, so the business states out a requirement. And then after, say, a couple of meetings or some meetings, discussions, they come up with a list of data points
it gets turned over to tech, and technology tries to deliver that, right? And then what happens is that where it fails is, you know, all you are doing is you are mapping and you are just exchanging data, and then very soon you see, business comes back and says, oh, this was not what I was expecting to be, you know, provisioned out. I was expecting the data to be this way, that way. I was expecting this type of values and all that, right? So I don't think that's the right way to do it. What has worked, one of the probably the patterns I can share is that the moment you have an engagement, you have a requirement, I think it's very important to travel together. The business and technology and all the architects need to travel together, in the sense, understand how the information flows today, right? Understand if there are information gaps. So like the architect can come and showcase to the business, okay, here is what you're asking. This is what we have today. This is how things flow today. Now, will that fit what you're asking, or is there a gap? So we talk very high level at that point. And then if you see there is a gap, then you go back and ask a question, okay, what are the data sources we are missing, right? You know, what can solve the problem? So that is a very information architecture type of session, right? You are not really talking about implementing the design, but here you are talking about information flows and architecture. That is number one. Now, once you have got past the information and architecture and flows piece, and we feel there is a general buy-in that, okay, this is how we want to solve the problem, the next thing is you want to get into the data discoverability and profiling piece. And what has worked for me is I've worked in sessions where I will take data samples, various patterns, look at all the important data points, try to come up with different data sets based on those data points and showcase to the business. Hey, you are trying to, say, generate this letter. In order to generate this letter, you have told us that you need all these data points. And for those data points, I'm seeing all these different patterns. You know, it can be very, very basic, like, I have a certain code which has leading zeros in it. There are codes which does not have any leading zeros in it. So is that going to be a problem for you? Is that going to make any impact for you? Is that going to change how the letter is going to behave? I think it's important to talk about those patterns, because the business doesn't know those patterns. All they know is that they're going to get a set of data points and they're going to generate a letter. But we, like the data profiling or data discoverability, is where you can showcase to them, hey, these are the different data patterns we are seeing. Do you sense that this can break anything on your site? Right? And I think that's a very important question to ask. What I said earlier, Scott, it might spark a thought. Oh, maybe I didn't think about this scenario. Oh, what happens if the data comes in this way? Is my processes all set up to handle those type of things, right? So I think that's a pattern that has really worked for me. And I've done it over and over again in more recent projects after I have struggled with it in the earlier stages in my career. Nowadays, when I do requirement analysis, like very second meeting or so, I'm actually starting to have discussions with data and walk through the requirement, because I want to kind of shake the tree and see if there is something that is going to fall out of this, or see if there is any gap in this. Because on projects where it did not work, or where the projects failed, one of the primary reasons is that the data patterns were not discovered. So they ran into that data pattern in production and it breaks. And then it's all like, everybody's like, oh, what happened? And then we find that, oh, wait a second. You know, we found that this particular field can have this type of value as well, and nobody accounted for it. So yeah. That, I think, is what has worked for me.
So yeah, Abe Gong on his episode had talked a little bit about when you're talking about the producers and the consumers having that meeting, that he used the phrase of the data having a veto in how you're trying to set something up. And I think this is part of what he was talking about of like, here's how you're trying to set this up, but the data can say, no, you can't do that. You know, it, because the data isn't in that format where it works, right? And so exactly what you're talking about. I think a lot of what you're saying is something that I see a lot with people who are having success in how they're dealing with data, which is just this intentionality factor of, hey, like, we want to make sure that this makes sense and that this isn't going to just break for because we weren't careful about it. And so, you know, slowing down to speed up is something that people talk about, and it's kind of a cliche, but it's true, right? Of
it's true. Like,
not trying to charge ahead just because you could get something done when it's not going to be done in the right way. So yeah, I think those are really, really helpful points. So you've learned all of this stuff, especially on the operational plane side of things. Moving into kind of the data mesh realm, a lot of people who haven't been or who have been on the data side of things purely, not as much on the operational data aspects, but like the analytics side, the BI side, what advice would you give them on where to learn from or what to learn from or where to prevent themselves from going down bad paths? I know it's a very, very big question, but like, are there any things that you would tell people that if they haven't been as focused on the operational aspects of stuff, of like, what have you learned or where should they go and make sure that they learn about certain patterns or things like that so that they are setting themselves up for success and that they're not having to rediscover the same patterns that we've discovered historically. So like, can we skip them ahead to being successful?
Got you. I think, yeah, that's a very good question. I guess I'll try to break it up into different parts here. So one of the thing is, in general, the curiosity factor and asking the right questions. You know, even if you're on the BI side, analytics side, I guess the valid question to ask is, or the question that is always valid is that, what problem are we trying to solve, right? And if we know the problem we are trying to solve, do we have all the capabilities to solve the problem? So one could be technology capabilities, the other could be resources in terms of people, money, and say other factors that are involved in it. And the third thing is that, the third most important thing is that you want to make an assessment of how the information flows, you know, like where the information comes from. You know, does it satisfy our SLAs? Then is the data reliable? Because what happens in the analytics space is that you are relying on a lot of different types of data sources. So you want to be engaged with them to the effect that you make sure the data quality issues or metadata issues are all handled at the different data source level. Right, and they have a good type of data governance around them. Because what happens is that if you are building a building like a BI dashboard or a AI type of model or anything related to that, it's going to be very critical to get good information coming through. I know that's kind of like a utopian thing, but what I'm trying to say here is that data that's of acceptable quality, you know, the data that you can work with. So I think we as analytics people need to put certain guardrails in place, you know, so that those things happen. And The other most important thing is that your metadata needs to be really rich, because if you're producing a report and you are representing data points, you want to make sure that you have very good metadata backing that. You know, like today people talk about metrics layer or semantic layer. What those concepts are talking about is that having a very consistent way of looking at your metrics. And I think that is going to be very important. So for example, right, if you're talking about, say, unpaid principal balance, you make sure that you have a pretty consistent definition of what it is in your analytics space. Because if somebody is, if two people are pulling different reports and if they're referencing the same data point, right, they don't want to be walking away with two different interpretations. You want to know that it's the same interpretation. And I think in order to achieve that, I feel that that metrics layer concept or the semantic layer concept can be very helpful.
Yeah.
Because what you are doing there is you are trying to rationalize and normalize a lot of the definitions and interpretations. And I think, Scott, what I've seen is the biggest challenge both in operational and analytics is that particular aspect. We've been in conversations where it's literally like a bloodbath on, what a particular term can mean. And I think getting that down is going to be very important.
Yeah.
Like, say, for example, say you spend, millions of dollars building a very nice, analytics data store, for example. And if people are going to have questions about what you are trying to report on or build on or model on, then we have a problem, right? I mean, then people are going to question the validity. So I don't think we should get to that point. In order to avoid those pitfalls, I think you put a lot of the effort right up front.
Yeah.
On deciding how you want to build the whole analytics layer and make it more efficient. So I think, I don't know if I was all over the place, but these are some of the thoughts that came to me when you talk about analytics and how you can make it more successful.
No, I think it was very succinct and clear. And you talked about the data quality issues at the source. I kind of tell people stop trying to clean up the polluted river instead of go up and prevent the pollution, right? If you can prevent the pollution, that's
correct.
That just makes sure everybody's lives easier. So, Ramdas, this has been super awesome. Really, really appreciate you taking the time and sharing this information with folks. I think it'll be helpful for a lot of people. If people want to follow up with you on this, is the best place to reach you LinkedIn, and kind of what do you want people actually following up with you about if they've got questions on certain things or want to talk on certain topics?
So definitely they can follow me follow up with me on LinkedIn. That is fine with me. If they have questions or if they want to have any type of discussions, and I'm very open to learning. I think in the data space, I feel things are evolving each day. The newer things are coming in. So I'm willing to discuss or learn about different perspectives or a unique problem they have solved. I'm all open for that. Yes. So definitely I'm reachable on LinkedIn and I'm open to any type of discussions or questions. I'm open to that.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you everybody for listening. I'd again like to thank my guest today, Ramdas Narayanan, who's the Vice President, Product Manager for Data Analytics and Insights at Bank of America. You can find a link to his LinkedIn if you'd like to get in touch with him in the show notes. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Data Mesh Radio. Hopefully it was useful to you. If you'd like to connect with the show, you can find us on LinkedIn or Twitter. If you'd like to connect with me, you can do the same. If you have feedback, or especially if you'd like to be a guest, we've got some links in the show notes to tell you how to do that. I'd love to hear what questions people have and how I can be useful. And then this is provided as a free community resource by DataStax. So please do stick around after the music if you'd like to hear more about what DataStax is offering with their serverless managed version of Cassandra. Data Mesh Radio is a free community resource provided by DataStax. If you're not aware, I'm actually employed by DataStax, and they've allowed me to be a resource for the general data community, learning about data mesh, data as a product, and other related topics. If you're not aware, DataStax has made a lot of pretty big, interesting changes in the last few years. They now offer a multi-region, very performant, serverless database offering with a number of easy-to-develop-for APIs with like gRPC, JSON, GraphQL, REST. You know, if you'd like to learn more, check them out. You can check out their AstraDB offering, and you can use the code DAAP500. That's DAAP500. Or data as a product 500 to get $500 of free credits. You can also check out what they're doing with streaming. It's pretty interesting.